Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old lang syne? For old lang syne, dear, for old lang syne, we'll tak a cup o' kindness yet for days of old lang syne.
I don't know, I just wanted to start the show with that. Happy New Year, Robert.
Happy New Year, Frank.
It is 2018. My microphone, I have droopy mic syndrome.
Good thing it's a G show. I got all sorts of stuff for that one.
Yeah, I gotta tell you. Yeah, I don't know what happened here. I'm taking a plastic spoon to my microphone trying to get it to stiffen up. It kind of sums up my whole 2017. I was constantly trying to get it to stiffen up here. All right. I don't know what to, hang on, I got a scissors here. Maybe that'll fix this microphone. But it's what time is about 7:40, and it's not working. Get in there. Alright. There, anyway.
This is entertaining.
I know, it's just like, oh my gosh. Anyway, now they say if your year kind of starts like this, it's got it. Yeah, it's in that full upright position now. It's the only way it'll stay. Oh boy, oh boy. Yes. How, audience,
at least you got to start off with a laugh.
Yes, the audience likes it. Yes, okay.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I don't know. There's, I don't know what to say. Anyway, we, Robert was out front. The store's a little slow this morning. It's chilly. It's kind of a little, not really foggy. It was a beautiful sunrise on the river this morning.
Yeah, it was.
Absolutely gorgeous with the orange.
You had a better view, and without a doubt, than I did from the back parking lot.
Yeah. I was on my front porch, which is like 26 feet in the air or something. So
pretty impressive.
It was nice. It was very nice. Some guy walking down the street says, you know, is that a stilt house? I said, well, I'm not really sure. I guess it depends on your, you know, definition. And he says, well, why'd you build that? I said, cheaper than buying a lot in the river. He says, okay. And he's walking down the street. I was like, an electrician at my house. When a guy stops by and he says, I got a house in Ann Arbor. And I got an electrical problem in there. And it's, you know, and he goes and talks to the electrician working there. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, He's got this problem, and he just can't get over it, but he darn sure ain't going to pay an electrician to go to the house and fix it. He's just going to talk to the guy while he's on vacation in Florida.
Yeah, right.
I mean, what the heck? That was 2017. Everything you could think of. This was a surprise show for Robert. Robert had no idea I was going to do it. I really didn't even know I was going to do it, so what I wanted to do was go over, and wasn't it last January we were looking at 14-foot water in the Peace River this last year? Or was that the year before?
I think that was the year before with El Nino.
Oh, that's right. So this last January, things were more moderate going into it.
Yeah.
And just kind of going over some of the highs and lows of 2017. I guess for as far as, was there any lures that came out this last year that really kind of, you know, popped into your eye that caught a lot of fish, did anything?
Your stop, that rip stop.
Yeah, the Rapala rip stop.
You know, that's been pretty popular.
Well, you know, I think
those PETA lures have been super popular. Let's
go back to the Rapala Rip Stop. It came out last year. You and I went, I went down with my dad to go peacock bass fishing and bass fishing and all that kind of stuff. And I can honestly say I will never go freshwater fishing again without a rip stop as long as they're making them.
Right.
That, to me, was literally the most fish I've ever caught on a crankbait in freshwater in my life with a single lure. I mean, it was just absolutely astounding. So, good call on the Rapala Ripstop. I was using the greenback kind of silver one, but, man, we're selling all different kinds of colors.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed in their saltwater premiere. I did fish it a bit in saltwater. Wasn't, you know, as thrilled. It's an okay lure in saltwater, but it's not going to be my first grab.
Yeah.
I'm going back to the X-Rap. I think the X-Rap's actually a better lure, or the Storm Twitch, or, you know, as far as crankbaits go.
Absolutely.
Crankbaits, to me, are a lure with a lip on them. You know, you pull through the water either at a steady retrieve or you twitch them and jerk them.
Right.
But I would have to say my number one new favorite in freshwater is actually the Rapala Ripstop. But I'll take it with me when I go saltwater fishing, but I don't think it's going to be my go-to.
I'd have to agree with that. I mean, I played with it a little bit behind the house, and it was, okay. But the guys that have been buying them for bass fishing have been pretty impressed by them.
So, Rapala, unbelievable winner. Absolute fantastic freshwater lure. Okay, mediocre saltwater. The tail's a little too delicate. I don't really recommend buying it for flats fishing.
Right.
If I was going to try and target something like maybe some pompano or something that are really hard to get to hit normal lures, it might be okay.
Yeah.
But I haven't tried it yet. So that was the only thing I could think of where I might actually drag it out to see, because they're so tasty, you know, that they'd be worth risking breaking the lure over.
Yeah, that's true.
So the little tail piece is very delicate. But freshwater, all in. Now, as far as the PETA lure, why do we call it the PETA lure?
It's that live target, soft plastic, you know, swim bait. And I call it a PETA lure because I stick a lot of fish with it, but darned if I can keep them stuck on it.
So, in other words, live target came out with a greenback, shad, threadfin, whatever, looking soft plastic baits. And I think the thing they did was they went like egret baits. Egret baits has a soft plastic lure like a DOA cow shad, except the tail goes side to side.
Right.
And the DOA, the tail goes up and down. A great compliment. I fish the DOA 90% of the time, but I've got a couple of those egrets in my box because if they're not hitting that DOA cow shad, which is very unusual for them not to hit it, I can go to that egret and maybe pick them up. But now the egret baits are not as inexpensive as the DOA, but they're still more reasonably priced. The live target's like $10 a piece.
Right. Yeah, they're pretty salty. But they just swim so amazing. You know, compared to a lot of your soft plastic swim baits, they require a little bit more finesse.
You know, there's a little bit of a learning curve. You wouldn't think so because you can literally throw it out and reel it in and probably catch fish with it.
Sure.
But it's not. Oh, I found my phone. Look at that.
For a pre-rig. I'm
gonna paint that orange.
Right?
It's been missing for a day and a half. It's right there on my desk.
For a pre-rig soft plastic, it's by far the most
realistic.
Well, most realistic, but user-friendly for just any beginner fisherman. You know, anyone, because, I mean, we talk about, you know, we got a million lures out there, and it's confidence is the number one thing in your tackle box. I mean, you and I both have a whole bunch of stuff in our tackle box, but we always go back to the same couple of lures over and over again because we have so much confidence in it. And I think to help people get started, we always have those couple of go-to easy lures to get them acquainted with lures. And for a soft plastic, pre-rigged soft plastic, I should say, that one is easiest.
You do not have to put your own hook in.
Yeah,
you can just
tie and go.
Tie it on the line and go. But you do have to remember to take the little plastic hook safety feature
off. That one doesn't have it on it.
No?
No.
Okay, what was I throwing the other day that had it on it?
It was It was either the Storm or the old Calcutta, maybe.
No, I thought it was that one, but anyway, it doesn't matter. But I threw a lure the other day, finally got a hit on it, and it wasn't live targeted. It was one of the other ones. I forgot to take the little plastic tube off the hook. And
the little protector.
Yeah, a little hook protector thing so you don't get hurt with it.
Yeah.
And so I never got the fish. But I have not ever so much as even gotten a hit on my live target.
Really?
I've tossed it and thrown it all over because it looks so good and everybody tells me how great it is. I have never even gotten a hit.
Wow.
And it's a great lure. There's no doubt about it. But not every lure is for everybody.
No, definitely not.
And just because your buddy's catching all the fish in the world on this lure, if you're catching a lot of fish on your lure, don't go to his just because he says, give it a try. But I've been on the boat, especially with me and my dad. He's throwing a spoon. I'm throwing a little crankbait. We each catch the same amount of fish. But if I put a spoon on, he puts crankbait on, neither one of us are catching fish.
Yeah. That's the way I was with my uncle when we used to bass fish. I could throw a worm, catch all the bass I wanted. He'd be throwing Rapala Original, and he'd just kill the fish. We'd stay equal size or numbers. Switch baits. Nope. We're both at zero.
Yeah. I'd love to tell you that you absolutely need to buy the live target bait, you know, and I used to pretty much bash live target as being overly expensive and, you know, too much money for what you're getting. And, you know, they came into, trying to build a new lure company in a very bad time, you know, 5 years ago or so,
yeah.
6 years ago when they first started coming out. And the reason I say it was a very bad time, A, it was very expensive, and hopefully the new tax plan is going to save me some money. I'm really looking forward. If it's true, I could save 30-40% of my tax money. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
But when the only reason I bring that in is because if you got to get a building and trucks and distribution set up and warehousing and office space, that's very expensive now. And you're not going to be able to do that.
That's cheap compared to the machine to actually extrude all those things,
right,
to make the lures.
You've got
to
make the lure. You've got to ship them. You've got to have a place to warehouse them. You got to buy the UPC code rights. There's just so many things you have to do now. And they're all much more expensive. You take a company like Rapala or Bomber Lures or Hedden, you know, these kind of, they've been in business a long time. They own the buildings. They, you know, they have the distribution set up. They've got all that in place.
Right.
They're not starting from scratch. Think of the cost of a truck. How many lures, if you were making, you know, 50 or 75 cents a lure, would you have to sell? You got to make $2-3 a lure on it.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, you just can't live on that little bit of, you know, profit margin. You know, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely
physically impossible to bring a new lure company out and sell for the price of an older established company.
Right, absolutely.
So I apologize to Live Target for, you know, calling them, you know, greedy and excessive. But the truth of the matter is, if you think about, you know, an established company who's got all their stuff together, got the people there, they've gone through their ups and downs, you know, and, you know, they're there. They know what they got.
Well, and they also started off as a hard plastic company, you know, making hard baits, which is a lot more expensive. And I think that's why we, every time we go to one of the trade shows, we see so many soft plastic companies, because I think it's probably cheaper manufacturing-wise and product-wise to make soft plastics. So
I don't think it's any cheaper to make what Live Target's making than it does to make a hard bait. I'd say the cost is 50-50.
You think?
Because they're not they're not doing 12 at a time out of an extruder, I don't think.
Right.
So, you know, and even with hard baits, they shoot them out multiples at a time, and, you know, so I don't know. I don't know if it's any less or more expensive. It's not. You know, and they're in China. I mean, let's face it, they're paying people, what, 75 cents an hour or something like that?
If they're lucky.
Yeah, it's 50, 75 cents an hour, two meals a day, and one of them has to have meat.
Yeah.
You know, which isn't right. I mean, everybody in the world deserves, no matter what country you're in or where you are, who you are, you deserve to have a job that you can, you know, have a decent place to live, have some time off, and afford a little bit of luxury items. You don't have to have a lot, but just a little tiny bit.
Yeah.
You know, but a decent place to live, and, you know, everybody in the world deserves that. This whole slave labor market, I'm not in agreement with.
No, I agree with you on that.
Look at Mark Nichols, DOA. He makes all his lures here in the U.S. Everything's made here. The packaging, every single part of a DOA lure is made in the U.S. And they're very inexpensive.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So if Mark Nichols can do it, come on, wake up the rest of you guys. I mean, why are we importing? Mark Nichols showed you how to do it the right way. DOA lures.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
As far as what was a miss this year, what was a loser? Any lure that you can think of that really came out as a loser?
Mm-hmm.
Like one we said, okay, well, we'll try this, and it just didn't go.
No.
I got to get some game show music.
Yeah, I don't know. Here. Yeah, really. To be honest with you, I can't think of one out there that jumps right off. I mean, yeah, that Storm 320.
Yeah, the Storm 320 came out.
I think it's slow, well. Slowly, but it's not really doing that well.
You know, the one I liked was the paddle tail with the weedless worm hook rigged into it.
Right.
And they're still sitting out there.
Yeah, I mean, they look good. They swim good. They didn't take off like I would have thought they would.
Yeah, that's a shame because Storm's a great company. But, yeah, I'm going to give you that one as kind of a, I hate to say loser, but really a miss. It missed the market. I think it was an okay plug. The only thing I didn't like about it was, you can't keep a hook in it. You get in the weeds, you give a little bit of pull, and the bait rips off of the keeper. And I think that's why I quit throwing it, because every time I got it, it's supposed to be weedless, and you want to be able to pull it through some weeds.
Right, absolutely.
And it tore up the lure.
Gotcha. Yeah, I haven't honestly thrown it, so I don't know. Just got to go by people's opinions and what they buy off the shelf on that one.
Yeah, so that was kind of a miss for 2017, the Storm bait.
And right.
Oh, that hurts, because I really like that company.
Yeah. Yeah, they got a lot of other major hits, so it's all good.
It doesn't matter. The truth is the truth. And so I was trying to think of what else was going on around in 2017. The hurricanes, the flooding. The first time I ever saw a bottom feature change in Charlotte Harbor.
Right.
I mean,
that's pretty drastic.
Charlotte Harbor has stayed a entity. The bottom features, the sandbars, literally, the maps hadn't changed since before 1900.
Right.
You could use the same maps. They were in use for almost 100 years, and they were still pretty accurate.
Exactly. There were so many. I mean, there was little tiny subtle changes.
Yeah, but basically, it was still pretty accurate.
Still the same. Absolutely.
And then we had the maps were just updated recently, but until then they hadn't been updated since the 50s and the 60s. Really, the 40s, 50s, and 60s, when they mapped this area out, unless you go south like towards Matlache and down in the southern area, they hadn't been changed since before 1900. So everything was updated, but Irma changed the landscape. The hole at the south end of the Maca cutoff is filled in. It doesn't exist anymore. The sandbar going out into the Maca River is longer and heavier. You know, most of the changes I saw were up here, but those are two of the ones that really are sticking out in my head the most.
Well, and I heard right up there by you, close, you know, between 41 and 75 on the north end, that big flat there, I heard that even got a little shallower and a little wider. I don't know if that's true or not, because I've only been up there a couple times with you.
I didn't notice it.
Okay.
I mean you would notice it. It could be, and I didn't notice it. I really wasn't looking for it. I've been finding these things. What I did find, it's a little deeper. On the north side of I-75, you come under the bridge, and then you can follow that island back. It is deeper further along that island. Once you come under, and you're coming from upriver, coming downriver on the north end of the bridge where it's flat. and you come under the bridge, and there's an open bay. It's all slow and awake there. And then there's, you just follow that shoreline down, and used to be you couldn't even get halfway down that island. It was so shallow. And now it's deeper, three quarters of the way down that island. I think the water boiled that out.
Absolutely. But so, we also lost a ton of sediment. I mean, some of that lighter stuff that blew out, I mean, because what, we can blame the storm, but who's to say some of this wouldn't have been pretty significant anyway, because we were, what, 12 feet above? The Peace River was 12
feet above flood stage. Or no, not above flood stage. Flood stage is, 11 in Arcadia?
Correct.
I think it's 11. And then it was literally sitting at 19 to 21 feet. So it was, 10 feet over flood stage. The Shell Creek went up 8-9 feet over flood stage. All those rivers were running at levels that we had not seen for 50, 60, 70 years since some of the early hurricanes of Florida. And all that water, massive flood stage, the Myakka, the Peace, all, and every creek, Horse Creek, Shell Creek, all of them were 6-8 feet above normal. And then Irma came and blew all that water out at one time.
Right.
And that's all of the existing water in the harbor and the river, plus the floodwaters.
Right. That's the part that people don't stop and think about. It's like, okay, it sucked the water out of the river. It sucked 10 feet above flood stage of the river.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not even really fathomable.
How much water left in a matter of hours?
Yeah.
To be almost dry. The Peace River was almost dry from Punta Gorda to Port Charlotte.
Right.
And you could see three quarters of the way across the river, the bottom. And that's at a point when the river was running 10 feet over flood.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that's just, it's unbelievable.
Unfathomable. So, and then that was Irma. And then Hurricane Harvey, and my heart still goes out because after living through Charlie, I was 3.5 years in a Winnebago. It took 3.5 years for me to get back in a house because I didn't want to borrow money. I wanted to be able to pay for everything I did. And I was working 7 days a week, daylight to dark, sometimes longer. And I wanted that when I went back in the house, we had original mortgage, our original bills. Everything was paid. But it took 3.5 years for me to get in the house. So you got Hurricane Harvey, Irma, you know, all these other, Maria and all that. And people think, oh, they should be okay. Well, it was 3.5 years for me to get back to some semblance of normal. And we got back and we were so excited. We were like, oh, my God, look at this. We actually have a house. It was like crazy. We were nuts about it. Actually, you know, sometimes you forget how happy you can be just to have a place to live.
Absolutely.
So, but then Harvey brought on the weirdest comment. It ranks in my top all-time five over 30-some years of doing this. The guy was worried that all the flooding in Texas had made the level of the Gulf of Mexico rise up to an unsafe level. So he canceled his fishing charter in the Gulf because he was afraid the Gulf of Mexico had become so flooded it wasn't safe.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I mean, I'm still going. Now, this is what a college education does for you. You literally cannot understand real life and reality. When you go to college that long, because this guy was a, you know, business guy, and when you take people and remove them that far from reality, to basically explain it, if you're going to raise the level of the Gulf of Mexico, you have to raise the level of the Caribbean Ocean. Then you have to raise the level of the Atlantic Ocean and the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. They're all at the same level.
Yeah.
Water is level. It's the one thing that stays constant around the world. Water seeks its own level. Now you got higher tides and lower tides, gravity pulls, this and that. But for all practical purposes, the only way to raise the level in the Gulf of Mexico is to raise the entire oceans of the world.
Right.
There's no other way you can do it.
No.
So to think that rain in Texas is going to make the Gulf of Mexico off of Florida too high. And what would be the difference? Okay, so let's say let's just go crazy and say, okay, raise the Gulf of Mexico 10 feet up. All right, you're out there in 80 feet of water, and now you're in 90 feet of water. All right. Yeah, I get it. That would be unsafe. What?
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Yeah, that was okay. That was quite bizarre.
Yeah, city folk just sometimes, they go out, look at the world. Go outside. Look at the trees and the birds and the animals and look at real life. Get out of your office for just a little while. Look at real life. There's so many amazing people out there in cities that come to visit and that come down. They're real people grounded in the real world. I mean, if that's your version of the real world, oh my God. You know, how do you make a living with being that disconnected from the planet? I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So, anyway, let's see. Something you loved about 2017.
All the people that came in this year that were just amazing. I mean, I got to meet so many different people this year. More so than normal for some reason. I mean, we had a couple people in from India, a couple people from Australia, obviously a lot of Europeans, you know, and then a lot of people from out west, you know, from like, say, Texas to California that were in here throughout the year off and on. There was, you know, I'm so used to like the Midwesterners and kind of the Eastern Seaboard being a huge part of it.
All these amazing people from California were trying to give California a good name.
Yeah.
They were awesome.
Absolutely. I guess it kind of made you feel a little warm.
I guess it, because they're smart ones. You know how we always say about Miami, you can tell the smart people from Miami because they're from Miami, but they aren't there now.
Yeah.
I guess go for California, too.
Yeah, it was just neat because there was a lot of different people this year that stand out more so. I mean, every year there's always new people. But for some reason this year there was just a broader spectrum.
The number one best compliment I have ever received in the 30 some years I've been doing this was this Christmas season. I have never been, I mean, it was pretty emotional for me watching it, and no one ever said it. It wasn't anything anybody said to me. It was the result of what they said. And during this last holiday season, we were literally doing 300-400 people a day coming through the store.
Right.
And for this little store, that's a lot of people. And with 300-400 people a day coming through the store, and they were kind of walking in the door, and you'd say, hey, you know, Merry Christmas. And they would just visibly relax, slow down, take a breath, and they were complaining about having to go shop. And all the places they went to go shopping and complaining about, oh, it was this and that and the next thing. And yet they were in here and they said, oh, I'm just going to look around for a little while. It wasn't going shopping, even though they were shopping and were very good to us. It was an amazing Christmas season. Thank you all very much for that. But thank you so much for thinking of this not as a place that you had to come and shop, but as a place you could come and look around and relax. That right. was the number one best compliment I've ever received, that I received, that you received, that all the guys behind the counter, Mike and Jeff and Pegleg and Steve and Barb and everybody, Chandler and Austin and, you know, everybody works here, that people were actually coming here to relax and get away from shopping.
Absolutely.
While they were buying stuff.
Yeah, while they had a little blue cart in their hand.
It was amazing. It was the best thing that, literally, one of my best memories ever. Literally, being able to talk, and we're sitting there, and we're working with somebody with a rod, and we've got the weights on the rod, and they're dragging weights across the floor. I'm going, line in the aisle. You know, and people are going, oh, okay, and they just walk around it. You know, you couldn't get away with this at any other store in the country.
No.
No other store in the country could you have fishing line going across the store, people reeling in lead weights on the floor, and the other customers looking, going, oh, well, that's pretty cool. They just walk around you. They're not going, what are you in my way about? You know, just, it was the most awesome group of things I've ever dealt with.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
All right.
But I also love that they also said Merry Christmas back and said Happy Holiday garbage.
So, I mean, a few happy holidays, but I don't mind that because look at Lee. Lee came in.
Sure, absolutely.
We had a really nice Hanukkah thing this year. Mm-hmm. We had several people coming in for Hanukkah gifts and all that. And I don't mind.
But it's not as trendy kind of thing.
The one thing I hate is Merry Xmas. If you want to say Happy Holidays, say Happy Holidays. But don't do the Xmas stuff.
Right.
Say Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah. I mean, I don't know why, but I was a little more festive this year, a little more relaxed about the world, not quite thinking so much zombie apocalypse for some reason. 17 really was the end of the zombie apocalypse thing.
Right.
And but I think people were like that too. The zombie apocalypse was over.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is, but... So anyway, it was just fun, and we had a lot of Jewish people in getting Hanukkah stuff. They're amazing folks. Remember, Lee comes in, he says, "Yeah, we're going to do Hanukkah, and she's making a thing. We're getting the Jew thing out of the way tonight."
Yeah.
Then he's got to go do Christmas because his daughter's, she's going to be what, half Jewish?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Hopefully he teaches her, about all the traditions of his family so that she can enjoy both, you know...
both sides of it.
Both sides of it, yeah. Because that's really the right way to do this season.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, get into the... You know, you need to learn more about Hanukkah. It's about a lamp that only had the oil for one night. Now, Lee says it burned for 8 days. I thought it was 7 days, but maybe it's 8. He's Jewish. Yeah. He should know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But the whole idea behind that candle was it was only supposed to burn for one night. Only had oil for one night, and it burned 7-8 days. And it was kind of a miracle back then.
Right. Yeah, I don't know enough about it, so I'll stick with you on that.
Yeah, well, I actually kind of get into, I studied a lot of the different religions, and I think the most pragmatic was the early Jewish religions because... The rabbi was the FDA. He was, don't eat pork, because at that point, if pork wasn't cooked well enough, you got sick from it.
Right.
So when you look at a lot of their traditions, they're based in actual health things. You know, it was all about, you know, human safety.
Yeah.
You know, making people better. And then it went to be a religious thing. But if you trace it back to its roots, a lot of health and human safety and all that. But getting back into the fishing, what was the... It was a... Oh, God, I would say a pretty crappy year on redfish. A few people caught a lot of redfish, but most people really struggled.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you that this was probably the crappy... Probably I mean, it's 2 years in a row where it's been bad, but this one definitely was the most significantly affected on all people across the board as a whole.
The two previous years are last year, not this year, but in 2016, some in 2015, and then again we had a bad red tide in 2014.
Right.
Red tides in September, October kill millions upon millions upon millions of tiny redfish. The ones that are too small to see.
Yeah.
They come in and people will, well, I didn't see that many dead redfish. Well, you're looking at big fish. Babies are only a quarter inch, a half inch, you know, three quarters inch.
Well, they were all pregnant too. There was a, you know, okay, let's say you saw 500 30 inch redfish dead along the miles of shoreline from here to Tampa. Just for an arbitrary number, 1,000 of them. That's... You know, roughly, let's make up another number.
I'd say each one
holds a million eggs per fish.
No, I'd say 1,000 eggs per fish.
More than that.
More than that?
More than that.
Okay.
100,000 would not be probably too shot out, I wouldn't think.
Really?
Uh-uh.
I wouldn't have thought a redfish did that many eggs.
Well, it depends on the developmental stage of it as it's slowly developing, because the stronger ones obviously are going to survive and develop larger. It's kind of like a salmon. You can open up a salmon and get that roe sack out, and there's several thousand eggs in it, but when they actually go to lay eggs, they might only give birth to half that amount of eggs.
Right.
Because they overpower the weaker ones, you know, just like anything else. Their bodies absorb it for the nutrients or what have you. So, but still... Let's say even 1,000 1,000 eggs times 1,000 dead fish.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Oh, don't ask me to do the math. 100,000. I still use that's my fingers.
100,000.
So, that's... I'm agreeing with you, but this year, the red tide held off.
Yes.
The redfish spawned. Mm-hmm. The eggs got together. They fertilized, the eggs hatched, the little fry started swimming to the creeks, the backwaters, up into the canals, the mangroves, and they made it. They got there. Now it's up to just predation, but millions of them were not killed this year because of the red tides.
Right.
So we've got millions upon millions of baby redfish getting bigger as we speak, growing, eating, doing their thing, getting larger. So next year, we're going to see a lot more what we call rat reds, the babies, the small ones. And some will be getting that slot size because fish grow at different rates. People want to put them in a cookie cutter. Well, we got goldfish, which are the canary in our coal mine for our freshwater. That way we know if the shiners are doing well, because if the goldfish are doing okay, the water's good, and it could be a bad batch of shiners, whatever, but they kind of tell us about the water conditions. But some of them are 6 inches long, and some of them are still 2 inches long.
Absolutely.
So redfish, snook, all these fish, they grow at an individual rate, like people. I mean, look at Jeff Calkins compared to Chandler. I mean, Chandler is literally at least four times or five times the size of Jeff.
Absolutely.
And yet, you know, they probably had similar food and, you know, good growing conditions, let's say. You know what I mean? So fish are the same way. You're going to have some that can grow into that slot limit in a year, and some that will only grow to 10, 12 inches in that year.
Yep.
And so we're going to see a very, very, very good redfish season towards the end of 2018. God, it's weird. 2018.
It's bizarre to say.
It's 2 years to 2020.
It's pretty weird.
We always think of 2020 as being way over there. But it's not. I remember celebrating the bicentennial in 1976. I played a, you know, big massive party back in 1976. We were at a club and it was way out in the country. I think it held like 800 people or something. We had a big, big old dance hall, you know, club, and a huge amount of families and everybody's there. And we did New Year's Eve on the bicentennial, and that was a party. Wow. But that was 1976. You know, now looking, and 2000 seemed forever away, and now I'm looking at 2020 going, oh my God, it's right there.
Pretty wild when you think about it.
And that, you know, they're talking about self-driving cars in 2020 to 25, where a lot of the trucks will be automated, a lot of the cars will be automated, and bring them on. I was completely against it, but with all the rear-end collisions, because people cannot quit texting and doing other stuff while they're driving. They can't drive. They've got to drive and this, and drive and do that, and drive and do this. So bring on the self-driving cars, and that way people can relax. They can watch video game, or, you know, watch movies and play video games, and the car will take them there. And I think it's going to be a great thing. I don't like it because of the aspect of the truck drivers, but I think the truck drivers for many years will have to be in the truck anyway.
Yeah.
And there's no way a truck is going to navigate a downtown situation on autopilot.
No.
Not going to happen. No. So, the only, you know, for over the interstate, so, I mean, that's just dull, monotonous driving anyway. They can sit in the truck and, again, enjoy a video game or, you know, movies or whatever.
Actually look at the scenery that they've been missing all these years because they've been focused on the road.
They get to look at the mountains and the rivers and all the, everything that they normally would not get a chance to see.
Yeah.
So, bring on the self-driving cars 2020. So, anyway, it is a fishing show. I got to get back to that. What would you say was my number one weirdest thing about fish was snook. And that was in this last little bit here. This last little bit of snook fishing, it got cold and the snook took off and started biting. I mean, they were just, the minute we thought, okay, the snook fishing is done for the year, temperature's dropping, they started biting like crazy. So
yeah, what was that about?
That didn't make any sense.
It made no sense. I mean, the water temperature didn't drop significantly, but it did drop.
Yeah, it went way down.
You know, but you wouldn't expect them to turn on the way they did at all.
And I mean,
and you would expect them to maybe that first day that 20-inch,
30-inch, 40-inch, we're hitting up well into the 40-inch range.
Yeah.
Ones that should be just kind of laying up by then, but maybe it was just, okay, hey, wait a minute, it's going to get cold. I got to eat.
Right.
I'm not going to be able to eat when it gets cold, because fish can only eat to a certain water temperature, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they can eat any time, but it just takes them so much longer to digest the food because of being cold-blooded. So the food can sit in there too long and rot and cause them all sorts of problems. So they eat at a much slower rate and usually much smaller meals. It all plays a whole role in it. You know, and snook are semi-tropical fish.
What I was trying to get to in that point was when fish eat and the water's too cold, like say they eat a shrimp and the water's too cold, that shrimp won't digest in their stomach and can literally rot and go bad in their stomach because they cannot digest it.
Correct.
So they can actually be poisoned from the food they ate if they eat while it's too cold.
Yes.
So that was what I thought was the most interesting part. So I think they started feeding because maybe they figured this is going to be a cold winter.
Yeah.
You know how they say, okay, there's, animals have more hair on some years, you know, they grow their coat thicker and, you know, the birds are leaving or this or that, you know. That might be a sign that we've never noticed before, that when you get that first cold spell, if the snook really start biting, maybe it's going to be a colder winter than normal.
Yeah, we'll have to watch that. That might be an interesting theory.
I mean, I just thought of that this moment, so.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting theory. So, I mean, we'll have to watch it over the next 2.5 months.
So
see what happens.
I think Triple Tail this year was another great story. Triple Tail fishing was excellent for part of this year.
Yeah.
Big triple tail, a lot of guys catching them over 20 inches, some over 30 inches.
But even just the sheer numbers of small ones, I mean, the absolute just numbers in general was pretty astounding. Yes. I mean, I went out that one day and we didn't see the big 20 inches, but it was literally every fourth or fifth buoy had at least one triple tail on it. One that we passed by had four sitting on it. You know, and that was just going out one day because I haven't gotten out as much as I would like to this year. But I heard that from lots of different people, from basically Sanibel all the way up to Venice. You know, in addition to the guys that were catching the 20, 22, you know, the 14-pounders, the 10-pounders, the 9-pounders. I mean, some pretty amazing just fishing for triple tail.
Yeah.
It was quantity and quality both.
So, triple tail was a real winner this year. Snook fishing in general all fall, from September, October, there's been a lot of snook out there, a lot of shorts people were catching, a lot of oversized, not a lot of slot fish, but snook fishing in general this year has been great.
Yep.
Almost better than the trout fishing.
Honestly, I would say it was better than the trout fishing.
Because we would go to the east side and we could catch a lot of trout drifting and going around on the east side. But snook fishing was just off the chain this year. It was really good. Trout fishing, it was a hit or miss. If you were lucky, you caught a lot of fish, a lot of trout. If you weren't, you didn't find any.
Right.
And it was literally a matter of luck.
Yeah, it was feast or famine. There was no kind of in between.
Now, I think it was about 5 years ago that you and I were talking about how many mangrove snappers were around.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that years ago?
Yeah.
And we thought, oh, man, you're going to be going to any pier anywhere and just catch a lot of mangrove snappers. And it hasn't really gone into that way.
No, it didn't.
And this year, for a month, every time I went out, if I threw a shrimp against the mangroves, it was pop, 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 pop. And everybody's saying pinfish. And it wasn't. It was all mangrove snapper again.
All baby mangroves, yeah.
And millions, that we're not talking thousands. I believe we're talking millions of mangrove snappers around the harbor. And I keep waiting. Now, are they doing what the gag grouper, Goliath grouper, redfish do, growing up here and moving out into the Gulf?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely part of it. I don't know.
Well, you don't sound convinced.
I don't know. No, it makes sense because I've never thought about it before.
And so this is my year. Remember the other day I was doing a radio show with you and Josh on Kicks Country on 92.9, and I came up with a new thing with slicing fish, and you know, because how you cut your fillets, if you slice them thin or cube it or steak it or cook the whole thing, it's kind of like a potato.
Yeah, absolutely.
How you slice a potato determines what kind of flavor you're going to get, how you cook it. And you do the same thing with fish. But this is my year for coming up with weird new theories.
I'll have to look into that on the mangrove snapper, because honestly, I don't know enough about their life history at all to know what percentage of them go offshore and do they need to be offshore to spawn. Because I know they get into big spawning aggregates offshore. I mean, that's very normal, and that's all over the world for all of your snapper species. So I'll have to look into that. That's kind of an interesting thing.
Well, it's the only thing that makes sense. We have seen banner, bumper, huge, huge numbers of baby mangrove snappers in the canals, along the mangroves, literally everywhere in the harbor. And yet we're not seeing the adult, you know, 14-inch size. I mean, we caught a couple up river the other day.
Right.
Terry got a almost 15-inch mangrove snapper fishing the islands up there in the Peace River. But it's rare.
Right. It's not numbers compared to what there are for little guys.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that right now we would have 100,000 mangrove snappers in Charlotte Harbor that are 14, 15 inches. And the only thing that makes sense is I think they're hitting that 9, 10-inch size range and heading into the Gulf of Mexico.
Makes a little bit of sense. I mean, it's definitely something to think about and look at.
Well, just listening to our conversations over the years, we keep talking about that.
Right.
And we've talked about it year after year, and I think there was like 15 we didn't talk about it.
Right.
But, I mean, this year again, we're talking about how many, just literally hundreds of thousands or millions of mangrove snappers, and we're not seeing them. You've been out doing the Goliath grouper studies with the state of Florida.
Right.
What's anything new in the Goliath grouper study?
Not yet. I mean, basically what it boils down to is they're trying to get a life history of the fish as far as juveniles go. They have a pretty good idea on what they do as adults, and they're learning more stuff all the time with that. But the juveniles, they want to see how far up into the rivers they go and how long they actually stay in those places. And the biggest question that's come up with them is, like the sawfish that they're learning, that they've kind of learned this past 2 years, is that they love extremely brackish water, but there's a certain point of the salinity being too low where they move out and they almost follow that salinity line of where it's at that perfect point of brackish and salt for them, or fresh and salt, I should say.
I would say sawfish was another real winner. From 2017, how many sawfish were caught and released?
Well, and how many were also tagged of large ones? You know, every year they get a lot of little ones here, but this year was like the banner year for them actually being able
over
to
six
target large ones and catch them and tag them.
Yeah, 6 to 14, 6 to 6, 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot, 9, 10, 11, 12 foot sawfish. I mean, this was the big number one year I've ever heard of. Since back in the early 80s when we were eating them, because they're very tasty fish.
Right.
But now, the 17 was the number one year for big sawfish that I ever heard of. People catch and release them. And I know literally, I can say, 3 people a week would come in and comment on a big sawfish they caught.
Absolutely. You know what the coolest part is that I learned about them that I just didn't know? I just assumed because they're in the shark ray family, and sharks are such a long-lived species and take so long to become sexually mature. You know what the average lifespan of a sawfish is?
No.
7 to 10 years.
Really?
Yep.
That's like a trout.
Right.
Trout live 3 to 5 years, 3 to 7 years.
Yeah. Pretty wild, huh?
Yeah.
I had no clue. I mean, I had to call Greg and ask him that, and he said 7 to 10 years, pretty much the average lifespan of them. I said, so you mean to tell me at 12 footers, 7 to 10 years? He goes, yeah, that's about average. I just thought that was pretty amazing, because I would have thought that they would have been much slower growing, you know, like a lot of your other sharks. So it was a little bizarre to learn. Kind of neat.
Like you say, we're literally, you know, learning as we go with a lot of these species. You would think it's 2018, we would know all this stuff, but you really don't get to know it all. Okay, to kind of wrap this up, we had some really great fishing for as far as snook, bonnet sharks, tons of bonnet sharks. I mean, more than I've ever seen. A lot of sawfish, triple tail, what else was there? Mangrove snapper. Offshore, think about how many lane snapper were caught this year.
Oh, geez.
How many lane snappers, porgies, grunts, mangrove snappers. Now, that kind of confirms my theory. Think of how many thousands of mangrove snappers in that 14, 16, 18-inch range were caught this year.
A pretty large amount.
Huge numbers of big mangrove snappers out in the Gulf. And for the last few years, we've been seeing thousands of them here in the harbor, and the Gulf is reflecting that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that kind of brought that point around to the other way. Well, I wasn't even thinking about going there. Had an excellent king mackerel season. We've had blackfin tuna show up. A woman called me up, sent me an email asking about where do they get a blackfin tuna charter. I had to email her back and say, well, I recommended Mike Myers because he fishes those nearshore reefs all the time.
Right.
But the chance of getting a blackfin tuna charter is like 1 in 100.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Because they don't stay in one place very long.
No.
But we had so many.
They're just used to people like Isle Mirada and places like that where they fish the humps and catch the little tiny footballs, which are 2 to 4 pounds, versus, okay, I can catch 22 to 4 pounders in the Keys in a day on average. But here you might realistically catch one if you're in banner day, 2 or 3, but they're 25 pounders.
Yeah. Much, you know, much bigger fish up here than what's in the Keys.
Yeah, just the numbers are so slim anywhere near shore.
So anyway, the Gulf of Mexico has been great fishing this year. Had a lot of bottom structure change out in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
A lot of hard bottom got covered up with sand. New reefs new ledges were exposed. Other ledges were covered up. Again, going back to the massive amount of water flooding out of Charlotte Harbor in a matter of hour or minutes, you know, from the hurricane.
Yep.
So Irma will go down in my memory as the storm that changed the most bottom feature of any storm in my memory, or that I can look up.
Right.
The number one bottom feature changing storm that literally changed the bottom in Charlotte Harbor.
Yeah.
So, you know, for as far as the house, I had damage on the house. You didn't have any real damage, did you?
No.
You know, and my problem was the hurricane damage showed me age damage. I mean, or poor construction stuff. I have a Palm Harbor home, and it was put together just horribly. It was. Right. I'm sorry. I cannot recommend Palm Harbor homes to anybody. That was just shoddy construction, bad workmanship. Which led to thousands of dollars of repairs for me.
Yeah.
In a 10-year-old house.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just horrible, bad, shoddy workmanship on part of Palm Harbor Homes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a fact. They're, and, you know, they warranty it for like a year, but the amount of stuff that's gone wrong with my house is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I've been working on that. I'm going to get back to it. But we've got the Charlotte County Boat Show coming up on the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th. We'll be at Charlotte County Fairgrounds doing the boat show there. Seminars all day long, all 4 days, every hour on the hour, or every hour on the half hour, I guess it is. And then we've got, we're going to be doing the Big Boy Toys Expo, giving seminars there in February. And then in March, We're going to be doing the Bonita Springs Boat Show, the Punta Gorda Boat Show, the Fish and Frank's Tent Sale. And then in June, we may be doing, for the first time ever, a new product showcase. We don't know yet. We're still working that out. But we're going to see how all that will work out.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, but...
busy next couple months.
If you want to meet Robert and you don't get a chance to come to the store and you're going to attend the boat show there at Charlotte County, it's at the fairgrounds. That's the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th. See, I told you, I use my fingers to count. Yeah. That's why you're adding, I have calculators and stuff. I mean, what an awesome invention, the solar powered calculator.
You think?
I mean, that's real
science
fiction.
Especially the big screen ones for me.
Yeah. I mean, when I... In school, I didn't, you know, you could get calculators that plugged in, but you still had to pull a handle on them, you know? I mean, literally, that when I was in school, you still pulled the handle on a calculator to get it to work.
Really?
The adding machines, yep. They didn't even have electronic adding machines. And then they had the ones that came out with the little light numbers on them, and then finally into the LED stuff and the, you know, liquid crystal displays and all that, but... No, that's how old I am, Robert. I actually remember manual adding machines.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. So, life has changed a lot. My parents moved in from northern Illinois to northern Wisconsin, and there were still farmers there milking cows by hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was in the 60s. So... You know, to see that to now today where they have the factory farms and they go in and everything's lasered and, you know, it's all
automated.
Automated to the point somebody still has to put the cups on. But, I mean, it's still just a whole different deal.
Yeah.
But, anyway, I was talking the other day about working in a strip mine, and Chandler has no idea what a strip mine is because they're illegal now. You can't strip mine anymore, where they would dig those massive holes in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember standing in the bottom of the mine watching landslides start at the top, and you had several minutes to get everything to the other side of the pit.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody, over to this side, landslide. And you look up, you see all this dirt coming down, and then somebody have to fix a road going up, you know, clear the road. You know, so you might be down there for a few extra hours, but it was a pretty cool way to pretty cool job to have. So a lot of things that they don't do anymore, which are very good because strip mining was horrible.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got to see it, but I'm glad it's gone. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Like several other things. Anyway, what else can you think of?
Well, honestly, not a lot, just other than me personally. It was just a whole new beginning of a life for me this past year.
One form of your life ended, another part of your life began.
You know, so, I mean, all I can do is thank you and the family in here for making my life tolerable and for you guys tolerating me. You know, it's...
You had your moments.
Yeah, I know, but I can't say thanks enough. You know, I mean, I'm pretty damn blessed.
Well, in those kind of when normal life and personal life is getting a little crazy, sometimes it's good to throw yourself into work.
Absolutely.
You know, and we're so lucky because people don't understand when I tell you our customers are the best part of the day. It's true
beyond belief,
because A, we have the nicest people you've ever seen come into the doors of the store, but B, when you guys aren't here, these guys, I got to be boss. All right, who's sweeping the floor, dusting the products, who's cleaning bait tanks? Floor needs to be cleaned in the bait room, and that's a nasty job. I mean, you figure there's been bait being into that floor for, I would say, over 60 years.
Right.
So that's a unique science experiment back there sometimes.
You think?
Yeah. But
there's a cure for cancer in one of those corners, I'm sure.
So, but out of all the other stuff, the paperwork that's got to be done, everything else, all that can be put on hold simply by somebody walking in and wanting to talk about a bag of hooks or a lure or a fish they caught. And, you know, everybody gets to stop the daily drudgery and go talk fishing.
Yep.
And that's the most awesome thing ever.
Absolutely.
So, I guess. I don't know what else to say, but I think that should be about done.
I think so.
All right. different version. Absolutely amazing. Okay, and the crowd is applauding 2018. The audience is into it. I'm into it. Robert's into it. And, here's looking at another year, Robert. Well,
yes,
anyway, thank you guys for listening. And remember, you can also listen to us on WKDW Radio. We're on 97.5 FM or KDWRadio.com. And we're going to be having different shows there and here and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, keep your eyes out. You never know where we're going to pop up. And Luigi's thing is still going on every month. I don't know what the topics are. I don't know how you find out about it unless you know about it.
Right.
Actually, it's somebody getting mad at me because I don't advertise our meetings and I don't pre-post topics. But I wait to be inspired. I think it's much cooler if all of a sudden I get this amazing idea and we just go and do it.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, that's the way it is. And goodbye 2017, hello 2018, and thanks for hanging in there with us. We now have our own private server. Fishandfranks.com got so big, we outgrew the unlimited plan. Unfortunately, they did it to us around Christmas, but we're now on a private server, and we are looking into buying video equipment. Because with a private server, we can run video shows.
Yes.
So, stay tuned for all kinds of possible weird stuff. I just, you know, a little money get together and, you know, and we're going to have radio fishing and then we might have video fishing. So, we will catch you soon. We got fishing reports to do this week. So, bye everybody. Say hello and goodbye to everybody, Robert.
Hello and goodbye to everybody, Robert.
Bye.